Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture. With your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest is a guitar virtuoso whose first CD, Breakfast with Barnabas, was nominated for a Canadian Vibe Award. As a solo performer, Jay Calder has also received the Best Acoustic Artist at the Toronto Independent Music Awards. Jay's just released his second CD, Vision, and he's on the phone with us to talk about it. But before we get to our interview, let's listen to The Cupbearer Forgot from Jay Calder's Vision CD. Our interview with Jay Calder. Good evening, Jay.
Hi.
Now let's start. It's been a few years since you and I have talked, and maybe people don't remember that interview. But let's give listeners a little bit of background about you. When did you start playing guitar?
At all? I guess I was about 10 years old. That would have been in Fonthill, Ontario. Yeah, I for part of that year, which I guess I would have been in grade 5, I took guitar lessons. And Mr. Heaton, wherever you are, thank you. But I also quit that year. I was just a brutal student. So the guitar lesson thing didn't work out too well for me. But went on from there anyways.
What kept you going on the guitar then, if especially if the lesson things didn't work out?
Wow, I didn't expect you to be talking about this kind of stuff at all. I had several friends that were about as proficient as I was, so they knew the same three chords or so, and we had a little group at our public school, and we actually learned a few songs off of the radio because they had just three or four chords, and we used to actually get to play at assemblies, and when you're 10 years old and you're part of a five-piece group that gets to play at assemblies at your school, that's pretty cool. So I think there were five of us, and we actually stayed together doing things. I'm making it sound like we were on the road or something. We were in grade 5, but that same group was still doing stuff together in grade 8 at our senior public school for talent competitions and things like that. So, that made it great fun. And then by high school, well, I was way into music, and I learned a lot from listening to other people, and a friend got me into electric guitar. So through most of high school, I was a rocker and playing a Les Paul copy, and then by the end of high school, I actually was able to afford a Gibson Les Paul Gold Top, and I had a big stack amplifier, and so, yeah.
Well, you listening to your music now, you certainly progress past those three chords. One of the things you've developed over the years, though, is a unique style of finger picking. In that, what sort of led to the development of that style for you?
I've often responded to that question by just pointing to people like Michael Hedges, Pierre Vinsuzan, and other finger style virtuosos. But really, it was before that, when I was still in grade 12, had a very close friend, about 10 years older than I was, who had been a musician. He played in clubs and stuff before he came to know the Lord. And he played fingerstyle guitar. And I didn't think that he influenced me as much as he had. But looking back on it, there's no question. I picked up a few things, at least, from what he was doing. And I know that because of this last album we just did in Vancouver, the Vision album, because there's a song on there called Sears Jam. And I really resurrected that. A lot of that music, I was playing that in grade 12, you know, or maybe my first year of Bible college, so after the first year after grade 12. And that kind of thing I wouldn't have had any reference for at all, except for, not that I got it from my friend, but he certainly inspired it. So, yeah, but then later on, I would hear of these guys like Michael Hedges, and I think, who's Michael Hedges? And I heard his name all the time, and he was one of the early pioneers of two-hand tapping on the neck and beating on the guitar to get different percussive sounds and doing a whole bunch of things at once so that it sounded like more than one guitar was actually being played, when in fact it was just him. And I loved that. I really loved that a lot. But there were a whole lot of inspirations, really. A lot of it, again, just came from listening to other players. When you hear someone do something that's new to you, that gives you permission then to try new things and to maybe approach the instrument in a fresh way.
Well, in doing that, and you know, you mentioned that, you know, during high school and that you picked up a Les Paul and started playing electric and that, but you've moved back to acoustic. When did you shift back to acoustic? Because some of the stuff that you do, especially with the percussive sounds and stuff like that, you can't get that kind of a sound out of a solid body electric. It's the hollow body that gives you that element.
And even while I was listening to a lot of Rush, and then Pink Floyd and Genesis, and Yes. When I was in high school, I was also listening to this guy named Bruce Cockburn, and I understand you're a fan of his, and Phil Keaggy, you know, and some other Christian artists. But even though I didn't have a clue what Bruce Cockburn was doing, I had never even heard of the concept of alternate tunings when I was in high school. So I'd sit down and I'd try to play one of his songs and just fail miserably, and it's because he was using all kinds of different tunings, and I didn't even know you were allowed to do that. So, and I apologize, I forget your question.
Sort of, when did you go back to the acoustic?
Oh, okay. Well, I went to Bible college after high school, and during those years, I was playing a lot of acoustic guitar in worship settings, while still playing my electric sometimes. And then I went on to become a pastor. I pastored for about 9 years. And while I was the senior pastor of the churches that we were at, I was also leading worship bands. And most of the time, I'd have an acoustic guitar in my hand, although a lot of that would be strumming or using a pick, a little bit of fingerstyle, but not. I didn't really get seriously into the fingerstyle until later on. I was doing carpentry, and actually, quite seriously, hurt one of my fingers. I had an incident with a router. And I don't recommend people doing this, but my finger ended up in a router, and it was a mess. And it was sort of touch and go, is Jay going to be able to play the guitar anymore? Because, and I, that came from from a doctor who was stitching me up and saying, we don't know if this is going to take, and yada, yada. So there were a few weeks there where my finger was all stitched up, and I had this thing that it looked like a cast over my finger, and I had noodled around a little bit in the past with a little bit of slide guitar, very little bit, and I'm still not very good at it, but I tuned my guitar to an open G chord, which slide players often will tune their guitars to an open chord, and I just couldn't resist doing a little bit of noodling around on the fretboard, even though I was forbidden to do so by the doctor, and I did open up my finger again, not to get too graphic and too gross here, but it was kind of a mess. But while I was doing that, I was coming up with all of these melodies and some counterpoint to the melodies, and it just, to my ears, it sounded beautiful. And it was sort of like the lights came on, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is really gorgeous. And so finally my finger did heal enough that I could play a little bit and for short periods of time. And I started to write some music in different tunings rather than standard tuning. And for most people, at least for me, at my age at the time, that was a big leap, you know, to be able to actually give myself permission, like as if there are rules, right? Because there really aren't. But you're allowed to tune your guitar differently and see what happens. And what it ended up doing is it gives you new colors to paint with, and particularly when playing harmonics up and down the neck, you have all sorts of new textures. And so that's sort of how I got into the fingerstyle thing.
Wow. I'm assuming that was your chording hand that you hurt your finger on.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue our conversation with guitarist Jay Calder. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Be Thou My Vision from Jay Calder's Vision CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with guitarist Jay Calder. Listening to Be Thou My Vision, it's an arrangement of an arrangement. what sort of led to you bringing that song into the mix and into the CD?
I love, first of all, it's one of my favorite hymns. And if anyone's interested, if you even go online and Google the lyrics, it's a translation. But if you go, it's a reworking of a translation. The hymn that most people know, if they've heard of it at all, the lyrics are absolutely gorgeous. But to my mind, they're actually more powerful before they were put in a flowing poetic response to this translation. If you can find the original translation, and it's a very powerful hymn. So I've always wanted to do an arrangement of it, and I've made attempts at it various times, and I've heard, quite frankly, a lot of versions that have been done on guitar, and they never really grabbed me that much. They were just, fine, but fairly simple, and it didn't really speak to me that much until I heard this fellow Martin Simpson, who is an English player from UK, and he did an arrangement of the melody of Be Thou My Vision, which is originally it's an Irish folk tune called Banks of the Bann, or Banks of the Bann, B-A-N-N, and it's not exactly the same as the melody that we would recognize, but it's pretty close. And I heard him play this, and I just thought, that is beautiful. That is just absolutely beautiful. So it was in the interests of just full disclosure that I wanted to include thanks to Martin on the album cover, because there's not that much that really came from him, truthfully, and all of the ornamentation and things, that's all the stuff that just seems to fall to my hand naturally now, and it just sort of comes out. All of the breaks and introductions and things like that, that's all me. But the basis of the melody, and there's some really nice changes in there. A lot of that I actually got from Martin's arrangement. So yeah, I think technically they call it an adaptation when you arrange somebody's arrangement. So if somebody wants to use my version, what would you call that?
I don't know. Looking at this, and I'm looking at the songs you mentioned earlier, Sears Jam was something that you did a number of years ago. When looking at some of the original ones that you've done, what inspires you when you sit down and start, like you say, noodling around on your guitar to come up with a song?
I always think of that question on a few different levels. The title is one level that usually doesn't come first. Although, years ago I wrote a song called Abigail I actually had the title first because I wanted to write something that sounded Celtic for my niece. She was getting dedicated to the Lord in the service, and I wanted to have a song for her, and her name's spelled Abigail. It's with a Y, and I thought, wow, that's a very Celtic way of even spelling her name, and I'd never really done any Celtic music before, but most of the time it's not like that. Most of the time I'm playing around and I'll discover something. I was going to say come up with something. More often the best, what I think is the best stuff, it's more like you discover it rather than you created it. It's like, wow, what just happened? That was amazing. And then you go back and think, did I just play that? I'm not good enough to play that. But then you think, yeah, well, actually, that's where I heard it, is when I just played it. The best, and I wish it were like this all the time, and this is just maybe a personal comment, personal reference for me, but the best is when you're having a time alone with the Lord and pick up the guitar, and it's a worship moment. It's of interaction with Him. And something will come out that's unexpected. And again, I wish it were like that all the time with me, because that seems to be, that's just selfishly, that's kind of special.
When you're doing that, and when you're sort of like getting down to kind of the mechanics of all of this, How do you remember the things that you work with? I know some songwriters they'll have a scrap of a lyric or a scrap of a melody and they'll pop it into their iPhones or something of that nature. What do you do with yourself? Like if you're having that time of worship and you discover this music, how do you remember that to work with it later on as something that you're going to keep and add to your repertoire?
I will record stuff, and I'm not doing serious tracking or anything by that, but exactly what you're talking about. You're archiving. If something comes out and you just sort of go, wow, that was neat, I will record it on something. I mean, for the first album, Breakfast with Barnabas, that whole album was the pre-production version was done on a cassette, like a little cassette tape recorder. I don't know if you remember those, but it was just, there it is, and I just pushed the button. Nothing could be simpler. Since then, I got the Mac computer and I got into Pro Tools and all this sort of stuff, far more elaborate. And you know what, for what I do, it's great if you want higher fidelity and greater quality and everything. And I've got some half decent mics for that, but truthfully, it doesn't help. It doesn't help the songwriting process. It helps in archiving things, but it's just as easy to, as you said, throw something on your iPhone and go from there.
Talking about the process and the recording of that, you ended up teaming up with Roy Salmond to produce this. What led to that? I mean, I've watched Roy over the years, and he's worked with a number of artists in both in the area and across the country. What led you to going to him to put Vision together in its final?
That guy is a
form.
Canadian treasure, I have to tell you. Roy contacted me a few years ago, and we had spoken. There's this connection through Signpost Music. Steve Bell and his manager had a distribution company called Signpost Music. And as you pointed out, Roy produced a number of the Signpost artists over the years, Carolyn Ahrens and Jacob Moon and Glenn Soderholm, as well as Steve, of course, and others, many others. Well, there weren't that many. I think at the height of Signpost, there were about 16 of us around North America. But he had contacted me. I saw him in Kitchener when he was actually out touring, which he doesn't do a whole lot anymore, but he was touring with Steve Bell as part of Steve's band, and we got talking, and he just said, love your album. I would love to be part of the next one. And then he contacted me, and he's been sort of after me for a couple of years to get something going, and he encouraged me tremendously to do that. And then, I'm out in Vancouver not infrequently, and so I was able to go to his studio a couple of times, and we spent time together, and it just worked out. And I'm so grateful. He's the guy's a gem, and a monster musically. He's just amazing. So
yeah. Well, we need to take another final break, and then we'll come back and wrap up our conversation with guitarist Jay Calder. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM. Thank you. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to A Longing Fulfilled from the Vision CD by Jay Calder. I'm your host, Robert White. We're going to wrap up our conversation with Jay. What's been the reaction to the CD to this point?
Oh, hatred. No, people have been saying really nice things. It's pretty nice. It's pretty encouraging because, you put yourself out there and people respond positively. It's certainly very, very encouraging. Plus, it's nice to sell a few, Everybody tells me, no, nobody buys CDs anymore. And I'm just very grateful in my case that hasn't been how it's gone. But the vast majority of what I do, people are buying CDs at live events where I'm playing, right? So even with the downturn for most musicians and Christian musicians the last number of years, it really hasn't affected me that much because I never did sell truckloads through some big record company or something. It's always been at live events where the lion's share of them get picked up. So
quickly, this will be broadcast later in February, and that are any concerts coming up in the area to promote the CD?
Not concerts, no. I'm going to be doing a bunch of church events in Southern Ontario in the next little while. And then I get to do a Caribbean cruise in March, which is nice. We did one of these last year with Back to the Bible, and we're doing another one this year. And, of course, I'm going to be working, right, tongue-in-cheek, but pretty cool gig.
Yeah. Well, if people are interested in more about you and getting a hold of the CD, how can they do that?
The best way to do it is go to the website. It's jcalder.ca, and they can purchase CDs there, but my itinerary is usually up to date as well.
Great. Jay, thanks very much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, and thank you to my guest, Jay Calder. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.selahministries.ca, and be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Selah Ministries, email robert@selahministries.ca, follow us on Twitter @Selah13, look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook, or check out the Arts Connection blog at rdalelesley.wordpress.com. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.